This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
And we are live here on Pet Life Radio and Ask the Best with Dr. Jeff. And we're here also on Instagram Live. Hello, Sharon. How are you? Waving. Vicky, how you doing? Vicky, I have another client for you. Someone who wants a trainer, so I'll give you the information. All right. For those of you who need dog training, Eloise Rescue, Vicky is phenomenal. And I get really, just so you know, I'm not getting paid to tell you this, but I do get a lot of clients that I've recommended have been very, very happy. And my sister, Jill. Hello, Jill. How you doing? And anyway, so you know the drill. Here for you, here for your pets. I want any questions you may have. There are always some things I want to talk about. But most importantly, that I get your questions answered. And if you have any, now's the time. But also, just tell your friends. I know it's interestingly, I get new clients referred all the time. And they come actually from people like you. So when clients come in, hello, Delia. And so we have Dr. Delia here, another veterinarian. So again, she can ask some questions, anytime questions, now's the time. She probably doesn't have any questions to ask, but I'm sure she has plenty to answer. So any questions that are there, then you can actually let me know and Delia will be happy to maybe chime in, right? So anyway, a couple of things while you're getting the courage, while more people are signing on, there's some things I usually go, as you know, I go through what's called the AVMA Smart Brief. It's just like little tidbits of things that are important to, A, not only to us veterinarians, but also that we can help share with you. So let me see. Let me take a look. We got a couple of things. Louis Vuitton's cousin has that Frito's odor. Also, his mini Labradoodle's ears and skin look perfect. His parents were excellent. Take care of him. What could it be? Well, usually with that Frito's odor, it is most likely a yeast infection coming from somewhere. Now, typically, most of the areas that we see yeast infections are going to be ears. That's a biggie. Also, the feet. You know, the reason feet is because the pads actually sweat. There are two parts of the body that actually sweat. And one is the tip of the nose, and one are the pads of the feet. Those have what's called eccrine sweat glands. And the eccrine sweat glands are like our sweat glands. So that's why I always hesitate wrapping feet. Sometimes we have to, but if I can get away from wrapping a foot, maybe doing e-collar or some other way to keep a dog's tongue away from their feet, I'd prefer to do that. Now, unless there's like some sort of bad reaction or a bad lesion on the feet or a cut, then I have to wrap them. But the reason is because when the feet sweat, if you have it wrapped up in a bandage, then everything gets so moist, especially between the digits, and that is a perfect environment for yeast. So I try to avoid it if we can. But ears are a biggie. And now what I'm seeing a lot of, it's interesting, and I don't know, maybe more so than I used to, is yeast infections called Malassezia on the skin itself. So now when I have that itchy dog, it's not just going to be anti-allergy, whether it's going to be Cytopoint or Apoquil or maybe the good old-fashioned steroid. There are dogs, I see a lot of dogs that just don't respond well to the other two. So I have to resort back to what we used to use years ago. As long as you use it judiciously, I'm not that worried. But it's not as good, in my opinion, but for some dogs, it's better. And also antibiotics, because there's often secondary infection. And I always say, when a dog has really bad skin allergies, not only is the allergy a problem, but the secondary skin infection is a problem. That's also itchy. So I have a lot of times these animals that come in, having been on, you know, either Apoquil or Cytopoint, still scratching. And I realize that is because they also need antibiotics. And I see a lot of pets coming in from other places that are doing a great job on the allergy, but they're not controlling the secondary infection. And now what I'm seeing with secondary infection is not just bacterial, but also fungal. So I'm putting them on antifungal medication as well. So you need to do all of that. And this is another area where topical bathing is really a good thing to do. And I would use shampoo that has chlorhexidine or some antibacterial, also some sort of like ketoconazole, something antifungal. But here's the key when you're bathing a dog or having the dog bathed by a professional. Important, that dog needs to sit lathered up in the tub or outside, wherever you have, you're doing the bath for at least 15 minutes. Just let it sit there. That stuff has to get into the skin. It's almost like, I would say, if you have a little lesion, a little sore, and you're going to want a little, like a triple antibiotic ointment, Neosporin on it, you're not going to rub it in and then wipe it right off. The whole idea, it's got to sit there and get to work. That's how I feel about medicated bathing. So those are some things you could try. If a dog has one set of shots, it's only 3 weeks. Can we do the second set? He is 14 weeks old. Well, here's my feeling about that. I believe that 14 weeks is too young to finish the series. So if you're going to do it at 14 and it's only the second set, I would do a third set at 17 to 18 weeks. Now, if we're okay with finishing the vaccine series at 15 weeks, my preference is 16. 8, 12, 16 is my ideal. But can you go 7, 11, 15? Yeah, you probably could. Now, do you have to vaccinate again in 3 weeks? No, you can wait till 4. So if you waited one more week and then a dog will be 15 weeks of age, then you're done. Then you can end the series. So my recommendation would be, now, if you only had one set and it's 3 weeks, 100% wait. Question is, how many sets do you actually need? And the answer is 2. But, well, then why do we give 3? 8, 12, 16. Because the dog's own immune systems start to kick in at 8 weeks. If you do it too early, it's a wasted shot. I don't like these breeders that are vaccinating at 5 weeks, 6 weeks. Not only is it not helpful, it might interfere with mom's immunity at that early stage. So I prefer 8, 12, 16, 7, 11 is fine, but you'll need is 2. For example, you have a dog off the street. You have no idea if it had ever had vaccines, and he's already clearly an adult. You still need 2. You need his distemper parvo, and then 4 weeks later, follow up with the second. That gives what's called the anamnestic, the memory response, and that gives that long-term immunity. So if you have a dog who had one set of shots and it's only been 3 weeks, all right, and he's a puppy, then I would say, okay, yeah, sure, give it now at 14, but give one more. And that could be either at 17 or 18 weeks of age. And that would be my recommendation. And rabies, by the way, I know they say by California law, it should be done at 16 weeks. I don't like that. Why? Because at 16 weeks, you're giving the final set of shots. All right. That's going to be a distemper, your parvo, your maybe Bordetella, influenza now, maybe if it depends, lifestyle, lepto. You know what? They're not going to get rabies. Okay. So push rabies to maybe 20 weeks, 18, 19 weeks. That's okay. So my personal opinion, like textbook, you could give, yes. Could you give it at 16 weeks? Yeah. But you're also giving everything else at 16 weeks. I think it's too much. Now, one thing about too many vaccines at once, this is what I want to make a point, because I actually spoke to a board certified immunologist about multiple vaccines. And he says the body itself, the immune system, a normal healthy immune system, can handle millions of antigens at once. That's not the problem. The problem is when you give too many vaccines at once, it is the adjuvant. It's the preservatives. That's when dogs respond and have a bad reaction. It's not the actual antigen. So that's why a lot recommend don't give too many one day. And I kind of agree. So because when dogs have reactions, it's more likely from the adjuvant. It's more likely from the preservatives in the vaccine and not the actual antigen that you're vaccinating against, then I would therefore kind of separate them out. I don't like if too many in one day, especially for little small dogs. Now, sometimes you have to. And the incidences of a reaction of just soreness, et cetera, versus anaphylaxis is way more just a soreness. So if you're in a situation and you need to give all the vaccines at once because of travel or because of whatever the case may be, animal control, whatever, then yes, you can do it. You might want to be prepared to give a Benadryl shot or something along with it to ease it, but it's usually not going to be anaphylaxis. So, but if given a choice, I like to separate them out. Yeah, so at 14 weeks, they still need 3 sets of shots. So, boy, I just answered these questions, Eloise. I hope you were listening. So yes, if it's 14 weeks and you want to give it, give another one at 17 weeks or 18 weeks, 3 to 4 weeks later, that would be the final. I would not want a 14-week-old puppy to get the finals. Even if they had at 6 weeks and 8 weeks and 10 weeks, 14 weeks is too early for a final. There are still a large percentage of dogs that will be unable to mount that long-term response at 14, at an immune system that's only 14 weeks old. So therefore, I would give another one anyway. Now, rabies, no. I would prefer, first of all, in California, you're not even supposed to give it until 16 weeks. So it's too early for rabies because we would be giving one more set of shot down the road after the 14-week shot, like 17 or 18. Maybe better yet, give the rabies then. I hope that answers your question. Okay, what are the benefits of spay and neuter besides stopping reproduction? First of all, let me say hello. Let me wave a little bit. Steph, how you doing? Eni, how are you? Bethany, I got two of my siblings on the phone. All right, JB, how you doing? L.A. Peck here. Lauren, how are you? Oh, good. I'm glad you heard. All right, so let's go back to the benefits of spay-neuter besides stopping reproduction. So this is a whole conversation, by the way. Let's look at the simple things. Behavior. Let me give you a statistic. We may have spoken about this before, but I find it fascinating. If one were to cut males and females, right, what percent of dogs in the world, let's stick with the United States, are male versus female? Let's keep it simple. The old KISS rule, keep it simple, stupid. Half and half, okay? Simple. Now, let's say only half were spay-neutered. So in any quarter, males, those that are neutered, those that are not, females, those that are spayed, those that are not. So 25, 25, 25, 25. Now, if that were the case, and you find a dead dog randomly on the road, roadside, what percent would that be? Either a neutered male or an intact male, a spayed female or an intact female? Based on the chart, the pie chart we just made, 25% chance, right? Of any one of those four. Well, guess what? 75% of dogs found dead on U.S. roads and highways are non-neutered males. Ah, so what does that tell you? It tells you that non-neutered males will roam. So if behaviorally, they want a mark. They are going to roam. They're looking for that female in heat. So that's a danger. Secondly, of course, prostatitis, testicular disease, if they're not neutered. Now, what about prostate cancer? Unfortunately, not a link. A dog, even a neutered dog, can still get prostate cancer. However, benign prostatic hyperplasia will be much reduced. So you have a better behaved dog, less willing to roam, will not mark everything, oftentimes a little less aggressive, maybe, can't promise that, less prostate issues, of course, no testicular tumor. I mean, come on, there it is. Now, less about the female. So it used to be that the biggest thing was mammary cancer. And if you spayed a dog before their first heat, you would virtually eliminate 90%+ reduction of mammary tumors as an adult. Now we found if you let them have one heat and spay them before their second heat, that's important, that risk rate drops to at 90%, 88 to 90%. Still pretty darn good. But there are a lot of other benefits to letting them have as far as maturation, as far as preventing urinary incontinence down the road. So the feeling is now it's changed. And look, old dogs can learn new tricks. It's changed to be, let them have one heat. There's only, by the way, only one breed that's showing scientifically, statistically, gets more tumors if they're spayed than not spayed, overall tumors, and that's the golden retriever. So the thought with goldens has maybe changed a bit to not spaying them at all. But, you know, look, coming into heat every seven months, it's a problem. You have all these, you know, male suitors, bottles of wine being sent to the front door, flowers, because they're suitors, you know, all the suitors out there trying to get a hold of your intact female. Okay, but that can be a nuisance. But generally, most breeds, most all the others, will show benefits in the long haul, medical benefits, okay, by having them spayed. So that's kind of my feeling, and I'm sticking to it, and I think it's healthier. My dogs have always been spayed or neutered, and they're fine. I don't see a behavioral change. Look, when you look at police dogs, all right, look at those Malinois that will tear you apart if trained to do so. They're usually spayed females. So it's not going to stop the watchdogging. It's not going to stop the barking. It's not going to stop the protection. So not to mention, of course, coming from my friend Vicky at Eloise and any other rescue, when you walk into these shelters, especially these terrible shelters around Los Angeles, for example, and you see hundreds of dogs, hundreds that are going to be put, many of them, if not most, are intact. So it's a terrible thing, but there are so many dogs out there that are breeding, that are backyard breeders, that are getting out and having puppies, and the majority of them, unfortunately, are going to be euthanized. So yes, the reproductive aspect is very important as well. Okay, boy, talk about being on a soapbox. All right, Mickey, how are you? I see a lot of waves. I want to say Kai is being adopted. Yippee. Ah, good, the husky pup is being adopted. That's great. I see so many adorable dogs, many of them pure breed. I mean, do they have papers? No. But who needs papers nowadays? If you want a husky, my friend Mike O'Hearn, the famous Mike O'Hearn, he just adopted a husky that for it. He's so cute. So anyway, as a rescue and a trainer, here's this from Vicky. I've never seen behavior change from a spay or neuter as a rescue trainer. So, and I agree as well. All right, we are going to, I want to make sure I didn't submit any questions. We're going to take a break here for Pet Life Radio. He's going to run their commercials. And we will stay on. I'm going to mute myself from them, but I want to see some good questions. So All of you, don't go away. We'll be right back after these short messages from our sponsors on Pet Life.
Talk to the Paw.
Hi, this is Amy Stewart.
Hi, I'm Jane Lynch.
This is Mandy Bourne.
Hi there, I'm Kate Walsh.
This is Catherine Tygo.
There's only one station that gives you the scoop on wagging tongues and tails. And who's walking who in Rent and Tinseltown? Pet Life Radio, the tail wagger.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
All right, we're back. We're just talking about 4th of July and some desensitizing options. So first of all, again, white noise, room all by itself, close the windows and play some music, play some white noise, those machines that you use for toddlers, for babies. That stuff really has an effect. And so also calming wraps, but desensitizing. What you need to do, and it may not have enough time to do it now, is you can go download sound effects. And they have almost every sound effect you can think of, including fireworks. You start playing it very, very low, very low, almost inaudible to you. But trust me, your dogs can hear it. And when you hear the noise, call them over and give them a treat. All right. And what you do is, as they get used to this, every time you call them, the noise is coming. Now you don't have to call them. They're going to come over to you hearing the noise and they get a reward. So now they're looking forward to that noise because they're going to associate that noise with their reward. Now you play the volume louder and louder, slowly, low. You may not have enough time in 4 weeks. And sometimes these things can take 2-3 months, but you get to the point where you can blast it. And instead of the dog shivering, shaking, and hiding under the furniture, it's going to come to you. All right, great. I'm getting my treat. There's that noise again. You train them to actually like and look forward to the noise. So now, interestingly, I have 5 dogs. I usually have 3 to 5. And in all my years, I've never had a dog that was fearful. Now, one thing it could be is that we've always had multiple pets and the older ones that show no fear, right? So now the other ones think that it's just normal routine. So I have no idea what it is or why did I just get lucky. I've never had a dog that would hide, shiver, shake, whatever from the sounds of fireworks. So now if none of that works or you don't have enough time to desensitize, yes, call your veterinarian. There are some medications out there. Now, one over-the-counter medication that might help is Benadryl, diphenhydramine. It does calm them down a little bit. You can also use natural My Chill. It's a product that has chamomile, valerian root, passion flower, melatonin, L-tryptophan. So all these natural anti-anxiety, not even medications, supplements and herbs, that might be helpful as well. Try it. I'd much rather, of course, that we do things that aren't drugs than those things that are drugs. So keep that in mind. Speaking of drugs, toxicity of fire stick plants, even if a dog just rubs against one, they're becoming too popular. Yeah, so again, any plant there, you know, one thing also you can do if you know if something is toxic or not, and I saw this and I thought that makes a lot of sense, is you can take one of anything that has potential toxicity and rub it on your skin. And if your skin reacts to it, like you get hives and redness, then it's most likely toxic if you ingest it as well. Think about it. If it does something on the outside, can you imagine what it's going to do on the inside? So whatever it is, the only thing you can do is avoidance. And if you have them in your yard or whatever, either if it's in your environment, remove them. And if it's not, if it's outside, avoid them. Just go someplace else. Don't go there. And I mean, again, more of a common sense thing, but that is their problem. I've never had to deal with it. I've never seen them. So acid reflux, my dog has changed food, given its ice, x-rays, did extensive ultrasound, I'm completely at loss. So what acid reflux is, enticement. So first of all, it's not a vomiting. It's a reflux. It's sort of like our heartburn. So for whatever reason, it happens a lot when their stomach is empty and they get a secretion of their stomach acid, which is highly acidic, obviously, and it creeps up the esophagus. When it does it to us, what happens? It's coming up, coming from the gut, up in the esophagus, burning the esophagus, right around here. We call it heartburn. And guess what? It has nothing to do with the heart. It's just because it's in that area of the chest. We call it heartburn. So what do? We take, you know, Prilosec, which is omeprazole. We take famotidine, which is Pepcid, some sort of antacid, and it seems to help. Dogs, however, are horizontal creatures by nature, as opposed to us being vertical. They're horizontal. So when it starts coming up, it continues to come up. And that's kind of where the problem we're having. So that's why my recommendation is late night snack. Let them have, usually it happens, by the way, sometime middle of the night, early morning, late at night, middle of the night. So make sure when you go to bed and they're being put to sleep, they have something in their stomach. I usually recommend taking about a third to a quarter of dinner, setting it aside, and feed it to them at 10:30 p.m. or 11 before you go to bed. So that is the key, all right? And before that, maybe 10 or 15 minutes before that late night snack, give them an omeprazole or Pepcid, depending on weight. The average dog gets about a half of either one. Over-the-counter Pepcid is 10 milligram, you want to give 5. Over-the-counter omeprazole is 20 milligram, you want to give 10. And then 15 minutes later, let them have their late night snack, then put them to bed and see if that makes a difference. It's not really vomiting, so anti-vomiting. And now that they won't eat, you mentioned entice. Yeah, if you could get something or give them, it doesn't have to be their food. If they like a bunch of treats, give them a bunch of treats. You want them to go to sleep with something in their stomach. All right, so my friend, great question. Thank you for re-asking. I appreciate that. And I'm probably going to want you to re-ask it again next week. My friend, Mike Lappin, he is a vaccine guy at Colorado State. And another friend, Rich Ford, who is emeritus, professor emeritus at North Carolina State. Both are, do a lot of that vaccine stuff. So I'm waiting to talk to them. I want the real truth. I want to know what the experts say and see if there is anything about these RNA vaccines that legit. And I will share it with you. But it's on my list. It's on my list of things to do. During the day, we recommend trying that as much as possible. Oh, that's a good deal. All right. So here's one thing to add to my list of the private room, the white noise, etc. is during the afternoon, run the crap out of them. Take them to the dog park. Throw them a tennis ball. Let them play. Let them run. Let them tire them out. So by the time it's nighttime and the fireworks come, all they want to do anyway is sleep. So that's a good idea. So really tiring him out as much as you can. Thank you. That's a great suggestion. Now, if he throws up, then he will not eat. It's a circle. So no, you want to do this before they, that's what I'm saying. The whole idea is to do this before they're going to spit up that stuff. It usually happens late at night. So that's why I say before it happens, that's when you want to give them the omeprazole or the famotidine and give them that snack. Lulu's dinner and say bedtime, she never threw up the yellow. You see, there we go. Thank you, Sharon. Yeah, so with Sharon, it worked. Hardwick mom, that's what worked. I had to take a little part of Lulu's dinner, save her bedtime, and then since she was doing that, the problem stopped. Okay. Chihuahua mix has started to have blurry eyes, cataracts, and they start to get scared to go outside, I'm assuming due to that. First of all, so Sandrine, thank you for the question. There's a difference between true cataracts and lenticular sclerosis. Sclerosis is an age change. Usually we see it in the lens. It's not the lens itself like a cataract. It's the lens capsule. And it starts to age, gets a little thicker, loses its elasticity. It starts reflecting some light instead of getting it all in. And that's why we're seeing that color change. It's a little bit. And it is an age-related phenomenon. Does it cause blindness? It would have to be really advanced. And so that in of itself, if the dog is bumping into things, if the dog is really having issues, what you could do is bring it to your veterinarian and we can do what's called the ocular fundic exam. If with that fundic exam, we can see the retina, if we can see out, then it can see in. So that's why it's important. So if we can't see in, if we do and we go try to get through the lens, the pupil, to the back of the eye and can't, then it might likely be a cataract, in which case cataracts can be removed. Now, you didn't mention the dog's age, but first of all, a blind dog does just fine. It freaks us out more than it freaks them out. But if the dog is perfect in every other way, then I would recommend at least considering cataract surgery. It's very expensive, typically done only by board-certified veterinary ophthalmologists. I do a lot of eye work and eye surgery. I will not touch a cataract because I don't have the right equipment for it. So yes, you need to see a boarded ophthalmologist. They are great. One or two? That's the big question. It doesn't always work. They're anesthetized. They're doing it. The ophthalmologists usually recommend do both. The general practitioners, right, that are a little bit more cautious, say, no, why don't we do one? And if that doesn't work, if it works, you're great. And if it doesn't work, you can do the other one. But they have ways before the surgery of testing, neurotesting, to make sure the optic nerve is intact. Because it doesn't pay to remove the cataract if there's nerve damage. If the retina is the problem and not the lens, then why waste your time? So they have a way of actually determining that first and then deciding what to do. So again, there's a practical approach, the academic approach. Practically, I would say you want to test anyway, see which eye, if they're both doing well, and they both have, from a neurologic standpoint, are both okay, then I would probably just do one. You can always go back and do the eye. What's the only difference? A second anesthesia. But it's a lot cheaper to do the one than to do two. So I would do your homework, go online, talk to the ophthalmologist, the good, the bad, the ugly, and make a decision. But if it's truly cataract, and not just lenticular sclerosis, then you can, and a dog is healthy and young enough to enjoy the benefits, having a few years left in its life, then I would consider the cataract surgery. All right, a good joint supplement. Anything with glucosamine, chondroitin, MSM. I have one called Flex, and Flex has all of the above. It doesn't have to be Flex. There are many really good brands out there, Dasiquin, Cosequin. So, you know, consider doing some shopping, look at the prices, but I would recommend anything. Now, one thing about joint supplement, we're doing joint supplements because our suspicion of an older dog slowing down and we want to make it feel better, it does help the joint itself. But you know what? There may be other things going on. So first of all, identify the problem. Make sure x-rays were taken. Do you see arthritis? Is there anything else that could be going on? Is the pain, is it one leg? Is it both legs? Could it be an early bone tumor? You need to get a good diagnosis, but also it's important because if it's just pain and you have the arthritis, supplements might help with the joint itself, but you want to make sure that the pain is under control. And there you might want to look into Librela. Now, Librela has taken a lot of hits online. I have to tell you that I have no pure, perfect answer. But I will tell you this, we have used it a lot, and I have only one case. Oh, by the way, Librela is my own 14, soon to be 15-year-old Labrador, and I really do see the difference. Now, long-term, I haven't used it long-term. He's had two shots already, and pretty soon I'll probably do a third. I don't do it every month. I do it like every two, when I see him really slowing down. But when I give him the shot, it makes a difference. So obviously, I can't control the arthritis alone with that, but it seems to help the pain. So it might be worth it. Look at what you see online. Take it with a grain of salt because it's not scientifically proven. The science still supports Librela, and even the companies that making it have been put to the test, and they are really proving that it is still safe within no different than, as I was watching some TV last night, and these commercials come on for Rinvoq and I don't know, Dupixent, whatever the heck they are. And listen to the side effects and even death. Oh, and yet they're on TV making commercials and selling the crap out of it. So they have to report every incident of an untoward effect, even if it had nothing to do with the actual drug. But they have to report it anyway. If it happened during the trials and that person passed away for whatever reason, it's got to be the drug. Was it the drug? Probably not, maybe. But everything gets reported. So just, you got to keep that in mind as well. And which dogs are having arthritic problems? You're usually the old dogs anyway. Who knows what can happen to these older dogs? Is it 100% because of the drug? Maybe, but very likely not. So anyway, it's out there. Talk to your veterinarian. Let them give you some names of other clients and see if they're willing to talk to you about it, how effective it has been for their pets, and make a decision that way. All right. Other miracle gave us Tylosin powder. Yeah, Thailand powder is great. I love that too. It's good for GI and it's also good for tearing, by the way. It seems to help tearing. All right. Sandrine, 15. So 15 years old. I mean, look, that's old. Even for a Chihuahua, I've had Chihuahua patients could live to 17, 18, 19. But would I predict it? Would I tell somebody, oh, get a Chihuahua, they're going to live to 19? Heck no. So you really have to look at quality of life as it is now. What's the most recent lab work? Make sure it's within 6 months. See how healthy everything else is. And see, is the potential blindness bothering you or truly bothering the dog? If the dog is getting around, and by the way, as far as their senses, all of their senses, One of the least sensitive is their vision. Nose, unbelievable. Unbelievable. Hearing, taste. My dog's going to be outside, and I'm going to take him out for a walk. So I bring the stack of the five leashes and harnesses, right? And I set them on the counter. They make a little crinkles. You can hear it, right? My dogs start going nuts outside behind the closed door. They hear that, or maybe they smell it. Either way, it's unbelievable. So don't overestimate vision as a reason to make a decision, unless there's glaucoma or unless there's another disease of that eye causing the problem, which is also very painful, then yes, 100%. But if the dog's not in pain, 15 years old, getting along fine, doesn't seem to be bothered. And also, do a little obstacle test. You can't tell vision, really. What I recommend doing is if you have a long hallway, someplace where you can kind of narrow enough and put a garbage can, a box, a step stool, a little ladder, and call the dog and see, is it walking in and bumping into these things or is it maneuvering around? If it's maneuvering around, it can see enough. So I would hesitate on doing the surgery. All right, let's see. Never stop being a vet. Well, at my age, I have to stop sometime. But no, I always say, I go to work every day, 5 days a week, see in upwards of, 30, 40, sometimes more cases a day. And I love it. It's my golf. So I always say, I have as much fun doing this as anyone who spends hours a day on a golf course. Number one. Number two, I truly feel guilty. I really do. I feel guilty if I'm not going to work. If I'm not there when my patients need me, my clients need me, I feel guilty, which is why I don't take enough vacations. But I'm working on it. Yes, the Thailand cleared the copper stains of the eyes. And yes, you can keep on definitely. It's totally. Karen, how are you? Say hi to Teddy. Give him a big kiss. Speaking of yeast and infections, this poor dog, an Airedale, knows exactly what I'm talking about. All right, Sandrine, thank you so much. All right, so anyway, that's all we have time for. I wish I had more. And anyway, have a great week, everybody. We will see you next week. I'm here. I'm here, I think, for the rest of the month. I am. The following week, I'm going away from the 16th to the 18th. One of my vet school classmates has a newly purchased cabin up in the Teton Mountains and the Idaho part. And about six of us or eight of us are all meeting. I can't get away for the 4 or 5 days there. All they're going is all of my classmates, except maybe one or two, are retired. I'm the only idiot that's still working full time. But you know what? It's not working. Fun. So, but I'm getting away for 2.5 days. Looking forward to seeing them. We haven't seen them in a while. The last two or three reunions, class reunions, I couldn't go. So this is working out really great. Yes, smelly, itchy. I know, Karen. And maybe it's time, but he'd also be a good candidate for really thorough bathing. He should be bathed weekly. Weekly with the antibacterial, antifungal shampoo. Let it sit on him. And of course, I haven't seen him in a little bit, I think since I was over your house. So I want to take a look at him again and see if we can get him on some more meds. All right. I waved at everybody. I hope I hit everybody. Talk to your friends. Tell them to join me Sunday morning. Same bat time, same bat channel here on Pet Life Radio and Instagram Live. And be happy to spend a half hour with me and hopefully educate you and have some fun. All right. Have a great week, everybody. Bye-bye.
Let's Talk Pets every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.